This is Boris Kaiser Day. I'm flattered to be the cleanup speaker before, but I realize I'm in a delicate position because every minute I talk keeps you from going to cocktails. So now Boris and I and various other people in this audience have had a long connection.
Are we supposed to read this?
I'll read it. This is a list of Fermilab publications, and in 1973, there was an article by Boris and Lipkin and me, and we were working on symmetries at that time. And I think I was at the Bureau of Standards, Boris was maybe still at Northwestern. No, you were gone, you were already at NSF, okay. And Harry was Peripatetic Harry, he's wherever he was, which was either at Argonne or Fermilab or Weizmann. Now, there were other people, other papers.
What was higher symmetry, SU6?
SU6, I think, was the higher symmetry at the time. Yeah. Harry had written a paper with Pascos, and a few more attendees at this conference had also written papers. Here's one by Roger Dashen and David. And here was one by Dave Klein and Pascos and Carl Albright. So the cast has stayed somewhat the same, and then there have been some.
How was that summer where Sam was?
Yeah, Sam was the head. And then here's one more with you and Frank. So it was a stellar time. So 30 years from now, we're still at it. So that's not bad for lion hunting. Now, Boris is a Washingtonian, and I, and there were other people. Where is Jeff? Mandula just appeared. Ah, there he is, back there. We formed part of a Washington mafia where we associated socially. There was usually a Christmas party at Jeff's house with all kinds of good food. So it was a fun time. Now, Boris, as has been mentioned before, did a remarkable thing. I mean, he carved out of that bureaucracy with blood, sweat, and tears the right to do research while he was being a bureaucrat. Now, as a bureaucrat, he was serving all of us. Not only was he spectacular for ITP, but he had another role in which he was the lead guy for the Aspen Center for Physics. And he just did a spectacular job. I hope everybody realizes how important he was for all of us. Now, speaking of Aspen, there was one time when Boris appeared in Aspen. He had just been on a long schlep from, where was it, Germany or?
CERN.
I met him on the mall. He's looking forlorn, lost, tired, beat, and I eventually rescued him by feeding him, taking him to Takasushi, where we had a good sushi dinner, and then he was reinvigorated and could enjoy his stay in Aspen. Now, all right, but the work that I want to talk about today is kind of shameless phenomenology, is the way I would put it. And it's work with Peter Kaus, and we had worked on quark and lepton masses some years ago, and we had always kept thinking about neutrinos, and now as more data came, we thought we would take a shot at seeing what good things we could do with it. And so we constructed a model where we assume strict hierarchy. We're not going to debate whether it's inverted, direct, three, the same. We're assuming strict normal hierarchy, and we're going to proceed an exact analogy to quarks and charged leptons. We use the known data, namely delta solar, delta atmospheric, the mixing angles from the neutrino oscillation experiments. Now, assuming assumptions one and two, we realize that assuming one is a statement where we talk about hierarchy is a statement about mass ratios. So we want to construct the mass matrix and a mixing matrix. And we want what we want to see is, can we write the matrix elements for both m nu and u in powers of a parameter lambda, just like what Lincoln did in the CKM matrix. So this lambda for neutrinos is going to be the analog of the lambda for the quarks and the charged leptons. And I'm giving you the answer ahead of time, then I'll go through what we do. The answer is we do. The lambda that we wind up with, however, is a fairly large number, which is about 1.6 times the usual lambda in the quark sector. It's not as bad as it looks because most of the expansions are in terms of lambda squares, so that helps. And then we are able to put some upper limits on the neutrinoless double beta decay mass element, the MEE that you've heard about. And if S13 is zero, we get that it has to be smaller than this. And if S13 is finite, this is the number extracted from the Kamlan data, you get 0.006. Okay, so that's the name of the game. Okay, for the quarks and charged leptons, the hierarchical model has certainly been very successful. You were able to express M and U as a function of lambda, which is the finite square root of M2 over M3. There are three masses, M1, M2, M3. And for the cases that we considered before, lambda is roughly a quarter. It's a Khabibov angle. It's 0.22 to 0.25. Since we know that we're going to do this for neutrinos, there's no free lunch. We know that what we do know is two mass square differences, delta solar, delta atmospheric, this allows M2 over M3 to range from degeneracy to some small number, which is the hierarchy number. So we need one more equation, and that's provided by the hierarchy assumption. So the mass matrix M is given in terms of three masses, M1, M2, M3. These are the mass eigenvalues. Now, M and U can be undiagonalized by M as follows. There's a very nice description of this in Ernie Ma's paper from last summer. M nu has flavor eigenstates, which we call psi mu e, psi nu e, psi nu mu, psi nu tau, that you're all familiar with. You've seen it 10 times during this meeting. So U rotates these mass eigenstates, psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, into the Flieger eigenstates. Here's the familiar U. We're going to let delta be 0. And we're going to now assume that we have maximal mixing for the atmospheric oscillations. So that means that we'll call S23 is C23 is 1 over root 2. Okay, so here is the matrix that results from that. Theta 13 is, you know, is a small number. And there was a paper, the normal number that was written down, I think, was 0.16 from Shows, and I think Foley et al. Looked at the Kamlan data and produced 0.13. So we're going to do it in two steps. One, we're going to assume S13 is zero, and then later, towards the end of my talk, I'll do the analysis for a finite S13. So if S13 is zero, C13 is one.
On the S13 square.
they produce that one with something like 95% confidence level, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now that I've made those substitutions, here's what U becomes in terms of, and we'll call capital S sine theta 1, 2, capital C cos theta 1, 2. Okay, now what we do is we make an expansion in, we let C be the square root of 1 minus S square, and then to lowest order, here's what U1 becomes. Now, that's kind of interesting because I can write U1 as the result of two successive rotations, which is V0, that's this one, and then V1, which is this one. And we're looking, what we're going to try to do is look for an expansion parameter for the mixing matrix, an expansion parameter for the mass matrix, and see whether they're close to each other, and if they are close to each other, we'll say they'll be the same. And that's what turns out. So for the U matrix, we say, well, this looks like an appropriate expansion parameter for U is epsilon, which is S over root 2. Now, currently, again, using the Camlan data, and using input from all these guys, tan square theta 1, 2 is about 0.45. That gives a theta 1, 2 of 34 degrees, so S square is 0.31. Therefore, epsilon square is S square over 2 is 0.155. We call it 0.16. Okay. Okay. Now let's say something about our mass matrix. Here's our definition of the hierarchy. We say that M3 is to M2 is to M1 as 1 is to lambda square is to rho lambda fourth. Now for a strict hierarchy, rho would be 1. But it really is a parameter that expresses our ignorance of M1. So it's kind of a bugger factor that you put in. All right, now, so we have three, here's our matrix again, rho lambda fourth, lambda square, 1. And now our hierarchy expansion parameter for this is capital lambda. And capital lambda is the square root of M2 over M3. So let's evaluate lambda. Okay, so here's lambda square, which is M2 over M3. Delta solar is M2 square minus M1 square is this. Delta atmospheric is this. And now I go through the arithmetic. Delta solar over delta atmospheric is this. Substituting in, I get this. Then I expand in lambda square, and I wind up with lambda square plus lambda sixth over 2 times 1 minus rho square. Now, if I just stop at order lambda fourth, then I kill, there is no lambda fourth in here, but I'll kill the lambda sixth term, so then lambda square becomes 0.16. And epsilon square was also 0.16. So phenomenologically, there's a pretty close relation between lambda and epsilon, or between lambda and theta 1, 2. And it doesn't seem to make a heck of a difference which delta m squares you put in within some reason. You'll keep getting that, or close to agreement. So, having done that, and having shown that epsilon square and lambda square are roughly the same, we're now going to assume that lambda is S over root 2, or lambda squared is S over 2, just as epsilon square was. So now both M and U can be expressed as functions of the one parameter in exact analogy with the Wolfenstein parameterization for the quarks and the charged leptons. So here is now the matrix U, okay? And so now all expansions are going to be made in terms of this parameter lambda square. So now M nu is U, M, U minus 1. So now we can write M nu to various orders, depending on how much expanding we want to do. To order lambda fourth, M nu is now given by this matrix, all in terms of capital lambda. And so we can determine M3, M2, M1 to order lambda fourth. And all of this depends on making the hierarchy assumption, but it's really independent of U. But we have this parameter lambda. So now M3, if you look at the equations for the definitions, go back to delta atmospheric and delta solar in terms of the mass squared differences, you get that M3 is this, and you can neglect delta solar in this, so you get about that. M2 is then lambda square M3, so it's about this. And M1 is going to be 1.3 rho times 10 to the minus 3, and you now have, it's up to you to decide what rho is reasonable, what range of choices you could have. All right, let's say a little bit about the effective neutrino mass, which we'll call M. Which is measured in neutrinoless double beta decay. So we can, for example, even write this down to order, we can write an expansion to order lambda sixth. And here is M, which is M nu EE. And this is now M3 lambda fourth times rho times 1 minus 2 lambda square plus 2. And I put in the values for lambda square, and this is what I get. Now there are various limits that I can consider. So let's look at some of these. And this is still for S13 equals zero. For S13 equals zero, I can get an upper limit. I let rho equal 2. M1 becomes 2.6 times 10 to the minus 3, and then M is going to be less than 4 times 10 to the minus 3 EV. The lower limit, I can, for example, let rho be minus 2, because then that kills, not quite. And then M is about 8 times 10 to the minus 4 EV. So for S13 equals 0, I get M roughly between 10 to the minus 3 and 4 times 10 to the minus 3 EV. Okay, let's consider a finite S13. Okay. And there are people who worried about hierarchy, for example, Ma and Gyunti and Tanimoto. Okay, so here is my expression for M nu 4. The way we're going to deal with a finite S13, by the way, is we're going to scale S13. So there's now a parameter kappa lambda square, where kappa is between 1 and minus 1. So I have these two parameters, rho and kappa now, each of order 1. Rho is defined by M1 is rho lambda fourth M3. Kappa is S13 kappa lambda square. And I have three regimes for kappa. First one we already did. That's when kappa is equal to S13 is 0. We discussed that before. And so here's M nu E for that. And then you notice that I can look at M nu E mu, which is then equal to M nu E tau, and it's minus lambda cube M3. Second regime is kappa equals 1, S13 equals lambda square. This one is interesting because now it's here, look up here. I have kappa square plus rho plus 2. If I let kappa square be 1, this becomes rho plus 3. If I plug the numbers in, I get about 5.3 times 10 to the minus 3. So that gives me about 6 times 10 to the minus 3. So even with a finite S13, I still am going to have an upper limit of about 6 times 10 to the minus 3. Okay, then there's a third case, which is where we can now begin to depart a little bit from the shameless phenomenology and try to make some connection with the theoretical models which try to predict what these matrix elements should be. So far, there hasn't been anything of that kind, as they said, just pure phenomenology. So now let's let kappa be kappa prime lambda, and S13 is kappa prime lambda cube. So now I can write M nu 4 as follows. M nu E mu is this one. M nu E tau is this one. Now, this case 3 is the only one that allows me to get a 0 in an off-diagonal element. And these are would give the texture zeros that you heard Paul talk about earlier in the conference. I can certainly get a 0 in here if I let rho be minus 2. I mean, that would already give me 1 0. Okay, let's say a little bit about texture zeros. These were considered as a source of hierarchies and mixing angles. There are many papers, Ramon and Ling, and then Frampton, Glashaw, Marfatia, and King, Desai. Now, if we look at M nu 4, if we let kappa be kappa prime lambda, this allows the possibility of two texture zeros. Remember, go back. Sorry, if I go in here, if I let kappa prime be minus root 2, then I would get a 0 here and a 0 here. And if I let kappa prime be equal to root 2, I get a 0 here and a 0 here. So that's a case of getting two texture zeros. Oops. Okay. Now, is it possible to get more texture zeros? And if I can, I can let rho be minus 2. That kills the ME. That kills MEE. Okay, so let me look at that. Okay. So now I have this case that Paul talked about of the three zeros, three texture zeros. And therefore, in terms of the masses, M2 is. Okay, well, you have two here, and then if you let rho be minus 2, you'll pick up a third. Okay.
But it's a symmetric matrix.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is identical to a matrix derived by Desai et al. In his paper, and maybe in yours. I don't remember. Now, Pierre Ramon and some co-workers had a a model of hierarchy generation, and we put this, we cranked it out to the sixth order in Lambda. And the point there is that you get a matrix with leading orders, Lambda sixth, and then Lambda cube along here, and just half down here. And these are of the order, the main thing to look at is that these are basically leading orders in Lambda, and they're very much like that indicated in Ramon and Company. And in a particular model that Pierre had, this model, which is some SUSY extension of the standard model, predicts that Lambda should be the same for all the family members, the quarks and the leptons and the neutrinos. Now that clearly is not the case, because we're off by, we're getting 0.4 and that one was 0.2. So there's certainly an open question, which is why? I mean, it may be that this model is nonsense. I mean, that's possible. Or there's some significance to being able to use one parameter, but why this one parameter is big, who knows? That we don't know. Okay, so my net conclusion in this exercise is that the data and the assumption about hierarchy implies that both the mixing matrix and the mass matrix can be expressed in terms of some expansion parameter lambda, and if I can dump in two more parameters, rho and kappa, where rho expresses arguments to the lightest mass m1, and kappa scales s13, and how big s13? Of course, that's a major question at this conference: is how big that's going to be. So our lambda square is 0.16, and we have upper limits for the mass and the neutrinoless double beta decay depending on the value of S13. So that's the story.
Questions, comments? Questions? Oh, well, perhaps I can make a comment. Several of you have asked me about sightseeing opportunities, in particular when Chaim Goldberg, I don't know if he's here, I told him that because of his name, he definitely has to go see Montaña de Oro, which is not very far from here. For those of you who are staying over the weekend, another very interesting possibility, which is much closer by, is that there's a farmer's market in Santa Barbara. And Sid Meshkov's daughter, in fact, has a farm here locally. That's one reason that Sid comes to visit us quite often. So it's a fun, interesting, rather touristic farmer's market. And if you go to this place, look for a sign that says San Marcos Farms, is that right?
San Marcos Farms honey.
And right.
It's possible you may see me selling honey on Saturday.
You see Sid selling honey. Or if Sid is not there, tell them that you're a friend of Sid Meshkov, and you may get a big discount.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good.
So I guess it's we break for dinner.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.